I looked on the works that my hand had now wrought, and all of the works I had made and had sought, like vanity chasing the wind, was the same, for under the sun all to nothing now came. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 11, the Ward Green translation from 2020. Our daily scripture for today, little children. Wow, I mean, I'm thinking about all the changes that have to be made to the world economy to allow for China to ship so many products around the world, because really, all the manufacturing essentially is in China now. And we've got to facilitate the shipping of goods from China. That's what the world economy has to facilitate. That's where all the focus should be. And that's where, as far as the economy goes, and the market, you know, demands, it's going to be essential that we have efficient transportation for all of those goods around the world. So crucial. In the article, the Ark of Urartu, in chapter 1, where we are studying in the past, well, recently, we've reached paragraph 10, little ones, and the measured area of the moon pool, 752,544 square inches. That's measured, so we're not going to be able to calculate that. That's a measured number that somebody else measured. And it compares to 761,712 square inches estimated by Mr. Windsor. We didn't calculate either of those numbers, right? So, they're close to each other, right? 750, 760,000 square inches. By my own estimate, those numbers are about four times the area of my house, in terms of one floor, that is, of my house. If I look at one floor of my house, let's do that calculation here. Let me just clear this. Clear it all. Let's see. Bring the calculator over. So my house is, well, it's about 1,200 square feet. I'm being generous. 1,200 square feet, but it's got two floors. But let's just consider one floor of my house. So 1,200 square feet times 144, which is 12 times 12. The number of square inches in a square foot, right? To get it into inches from feet, square feet into square inches, you multiply by 12 squared, or 144. And times 4 is 691,000. 691,000 is close to 700,000, so that's about a little more than four times. These numbers are a little more than four times the area of my house. Now, I think my house, wait a minute now. Let me think. 25 by, my house is about 26 by 40. Is that right? That'd be 1040. My deck makes it 59 or something. 50. No, it's right. That's right. It's 25 by 44. It's more like 25 by 44. My house. 1100, right. But with the deck, though, I've got two decks, actually. So the square foot of my house is bigger with the two decks. So, yeah, so I could say 14. It's 58 feet times 25 plus 14 times 20, the other deck that we added. So 1730 square feet times 144 times, and I didn't mean to do it that way, but times 4. That's 996, yeah, so I'm not including my decks. I'm just including the internal space of my house. But still about four times the area of my house, which is just the moon pool of Noah's Ark alone. It's the moon pool alone. So that shows you how big the arc is, if you can consider just the moon pool, which is that small area, which is shown in Mr. Windsor's drawings as this small area. Let's see if I can find it here in the drawing. This might be the drawing, is it? Or is it something? It's this one. Yeah. So it's this rectangular area here, which is a very small part of the arc area. What's the 44,000? Is that the moon pool? Because it can't be the arc. The water plane area. Let's see. I'm trying, because we know the arc vessel area, which is this whole thing shown here from the plan view, the top view, looking down on the arc, that's what it looks like. It's an oval sort of shape with a pointy stern or aft end, but the arc itself is 700,000, so you know, the 44,000 is probably it's not the full arc, so I guess that's what the moon pool was. That's what that number was, possibly, as shown on the drawing. But after computing the outline area from the measured points of the arc, of the arc plan view, Mr. Windsor subtracts the deck area of one Babylonian acre from the total area of the arc's computed outline. Since the Babylonian story said that the area of the deck was 1 acre, so he did that. He subtracted the 1 acre from the total area that he measured, and he did that to obtain the area of the moon pool to within 1.2%. You know, in other words, it's not an entirely perfectly accurate calculation, but it's close, right? It's within 1.2%. But what if we, remarking the Egyptian cubit to be 20.6 inches and noticing 10 cubits to be a multiple of 103 inches, because 10 times 20.6 is 206, right? 10 times 20.6 equals 206, right? And then divided by 2 is 103. Of course, it's a multiple. So what if we put the moon pool at 763,848 square inches instead? That number being equal to this number here, 2 times 2 times 2 times 3 times 3 times 103 times 103. And we better prove that that's true. Let's see. 2 times 2 times 2 times 3 times 3 times 103 times 103. 763,848. So that is the right answer there to what we gave here in the equation here. When we now add to the area of the moon pool the deck area given from the biblical dimensions and the Egyptian cubit, right? So we're going to add those, the moon pool area, together. How do we get that? Let's see. Well, that's the moon pool area, is it? Okay. Wait a minute. Well, that's the moon pool. Hang on a sec. That's the moon pool in square inches. Right. It's square inches. Right. Okay, so what was this? Square feet. Okay. 44,000 square feet. Okay, what's 44,000 square feet? Times 144. Yeah, the square inches of the arc itself, 6 million, is 44,000 times 144 to get it into square inches. So the the actual area of the arc is 6 million square inches, right? So that is the arc area. That is the total area of the arc. Whether it's including the moon pool or not is not specified in this drawing, but, you know, anything you want to do, you have to do a lot of work to figure it out. So we're not trying to do everything, because no one can do everything. We're trying to do something specific. So this is the moon pool, this 763,000 square inches. That's what it is, which we already said. I just lost track of that in my mind for a second. It seemed to me that it was a big number, but of course it's square inches, so that's why it's such a large number. But when we, so that's still fairly small, but it's bigger than the area of my house, right? The square footage of my house, it's bigger than that. So that's why it seems like the arc would be about the size of my house, not way bigger than my house, which it's so much bigger than my house, it's ridiculous how big the arc is, right? That's why a lot of people probably don't believe it either. It's bigger than any vessel that man in the modern day has ever built out of wood. That's why it's so wonderful and hard to believe for anybody, really. But yet, okay, we believe it when we study it and see all the evidence, but it's so incredible that man living before the flood was so intelligent and far advanced technologically. When we now add to the moon pool, okay, we're adding to the 763,000, right? We're adding this, the deck area given from the biblical dimensions and the Egyptian cubit, right? Which is just, we're giving the numbers from the Bible, 300 in length and 50 in width, the average width, right? Not the beam width, but the average width. And we do that, we get 763,000. Let's multiply it out. 763,848 plus bracket 300 times 20.6 to get it into inches, right? Times 50 cubits again, 300 cubits times 20.6 inches per cubit times 50 cubits times 20.6 inches per cubit, right? Because we're adding, this needs to be in brackets here to get it, or actually it doesn't, because multiplication takes predominance over the addition, but it's just much plainer to just put it in brackets. Okay, so 300 times 20.6 times 50 times 20, oh, that was a mistake, we need to point 0.6. There we go. We get 7,129,248 square inches. Okay, that was because I got 6 million without the moon pool, right? 6,300,000. So this is 7 million square inches for the arc with the moon pool. We don't know if we did it right. You know, we don't know if the dimensions given in the Bible included the moon pool or not. So we don't know if this is right, but we're just doing it to see what we get, you know. We're doing the best that we know how. And we get a number, this number here, which equals 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 3 times 7 times 103 times 103, which we should write it out in a more condensed form. 2 to the 4th power... it's the 5th power. 2 to the 5th power, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 2s multiplied together. 2 to the 5th times 3 times 7 times 103 squared, right? That's just a squared term. And then we have, there it is, 7,129,248 square inches confirmed. So that's a much nicer number because it enables us to give a factorization for it as well, even though it might not be the accurate number for the actual size. We don't know. It's kind of tough to say when they measure these things. They're kind of approximating, or there are certain errors in the measurements, right? So this is the number that makes it rather mathematically nice, right? That's why we're using that method. And this, our own result, from the product of factors of 103 as a simplification of the numbers of the arc's dimensions. A close approximation to these compares to 7,112,112 square inches from Mr. Windsor's own account, or 7,291,132 square inches from what measured dimensions are given of the arc, which was the numbers, well, back here. What did we have? So we didn't give that number yet, the seven. We gave neither of those two numbers until here, until this point. But those are both, well, they're one on either side of the number we just calculated above there. So, you know, there are no rules for how to do these calculations. It's not like a, you know, there's no actual method given by anyone for doing this. It's something we're quite happy to do it, you know, in a way that is free. We're free to do it the way we want, which is kind of enjoyable. But it's also, you know, we have to do it in certain ways that, you know, that satisfy whatever requirements appear, right? But it looks like we've got some interesting results, and the total area of the arc shape. Okay, this is what we got. Okay, so this is how we got this. It's 752,000. That was the measured area of the moon pool at the beginning of the paragraph. 752,544. And the measured deck area was 6,538,588. And that's how we got this 7,291,132 when we added those two together. It's a lot of work to show you that these things are true. But we can just take this answer that we got now, because it's, no, it's not the same number, is it? No. So we're gonna start again. Say 7,291,132. And let's prove that this is correct by subtracting the 752,544. That should give us the other number, 6,538,588. That's right. So we could do it that way and prove it to be true that way. The measured length of the arc is 6,180 inches. As already mentioned, right, that's the phi number 618, which we talked about. And the measured width is 1,656 inches, which is about 80 cubits, Egyptian cubits. That width is from Mr. Fassold, as the length is also. And those numbers are given by Mr. Windsor from Mr. Fassold. And the measured length is exactly the 300 cubits of the Bible. And while the measured width, well, I mean, we assumed it was, and that's how we found the Egyptian cubit size, too, which seemed correct, too, because it compared favorably with what the royal Egyptian cubit is believed to be nowadays. And while the measured width appears large, it is the beam width, that 80 cubits, rather than the average width. And when we divide it by 1.618, we obtain an average width of 49.68 cubits to be compared to the 50 cubits for the Bible width dimension. So 80.3883 divided by 1.618, 49.68. That is the average number of cubits for the width of the arc, 50, which the Bible gives. It now appears that phi has been used in the ark's design. And we talked about that, but this is very, making it very explicit here. The number phi, about 1.618, is often observed in nature. Right? It's observed in flowers, in the way the dimensions of flower petals are manifested. They observe it in the spirals of seashells, the way in which they can explain why the precise dimensions are observed, which are there, is using this number, the golden ratio. It's observed in nature. You know, without getting into those details, I mean, there are people who describe that. You can Google that, research all about that. According to Mr. Windsor, the arc design is sophisticated. This is really important, right? I mean, he's a naval architect, and he says the arc is sophisticated in its design. Moreover, the presence, he says, size, and location of the moon pool indicates extremely sophisticated vessel design. The moon pool, the presence, size, and location, all of those things indicate extremely sophisticated vessel design, according to a naval architect. It's astonishing, isn't it? The moon pool provided forced air ventilation for the ark. That's another brilliant thing about the moon pool. See, as the water is going up and down in the moon pool, right, it's forcing the air that's above the moon pool in the ark. It forces it to get pushed all the way around through the ark. And there probably are, obviously, there are vents. Like the roof on the ark is not sealed completely, so the air gets pushed, you know, out the sides or out the windows or out somewhere. But as it's pushing the water, as it's rising, it's pushing. The waves come into the moon pool. They push the air up. But that air is going to hit the roof in the ark, right? And then it's going to be deflected. And so it's going to pump air around the ark, forced air ventilation. It's going to cause ventilation to keep the air clean in the ark, more so than if there were no moon pool. It's incredibly ingenious, as well as providing a place. I mean, isn't that phenomenal? I mean, as well as providing a place for large waves to rise in the middle of the boat, rising up in the middle of the boat, right? A softening of midship buoyancy. In other words, you know, the boat won't be as buoyant, but it makes the ark able to sink into a wave rather than balance on the top of a wave with its ends unsupported. So it would be, you know, like it would just be, it's called hogging, where it's a wave pushes up the ark and then the ends of it sag and it can break in two. So instead of that, this wave is allowed to rise up inside, in between, you know, in the middle of the ark, and that prevents it from being raised up as high in the water. So it's not going to be subject to the same forces by that, by having the unsupported ends, right? And access, it provides also the moon pool access. It provides access for handling anchor stones. But look at this also, not just the anchor stones, which are anchored to the rear of it, the aft end of the moon pool, according to Mr. Windsor, but also access for dumping garbage and manure. They could dump things. And without this moon pool, the hogging, as I mentioned, and the sagging stresses, when, in other words, you know, this, the waves can be, there can be a big trough in the wave, and the moon pool is in the middle of the boat, and the trough would be causing a sagging stress. It's just the opposite of a hogging stress. But because the moon pool is a structure in the middle of the boat that strengthens it and rigidizes the boat also. So therefore, this other stress, which is caused by the sagging of the, where the two ends are supported, but the middle is sagging, that will not sag as much because you have the strength of the structure of this moon pool. The sides of it have structure and rigidity, right? I can't think of another way in which it helps in regard to the sagging yet. I haven't thought of anything else. But that appears to be the way it does it. But without the moon pool, these forces of hogging and sagging could have demolished the vessel, demolished it. A naval architect wrote. And that is the end of our study of that for today. We've got very little time, but we have enough time, I think, I'm hoping, to do our movie, continue the movie, which we were watching yesterday. Get ready. I think it worked well yesterday when I edited it. It didn't get too much longer, but we'll see. So let me just, let's make my, prepare this here. Right, here we go. Here we go.
It's refreshing milk, a delicious taste. I need sea. Meanwhile, the radio operators had set up their transmitter under the sail, which was still soaked with seawater. It was important to let the outside world know that we had reached land safe and sound. If we failed to get this news across within 36 hours, the radio ham in New Zealand would divulge his secret, and aircraft and naval vessels would set off to scan the seas for us. It was a great moment for the radio operators when their equipment had been dried and linked up, only a matter of hours before our time ran out, and our message was picked up by amateurs in New Zealand and America, thus preventing the dispatch of any relief expedition. On the headland, facing the spot where we landed, we planted a coconut from Peru. We originally had 200 coconuts with us on the raft, and most of these had been eaten on the journey. The ones left over were planted in Polynesia in the native manner. We spent a week on our uninhabited island. One morning, we spotted a white sail on the horizon on the other side of the calm lagoon, and we waved our flags to attract its attention. The small flag shown here is that of the New York Explorers Club. Shortly after, the first natives waded ashore, impeccably clad in European clothes, at any rate, as far as their underwear was concerned. As we had little in common in the way of language, we were compelled to use what might be called international speech. But we did understand that there was another inhabited island on the far side of the lagoon. But they were, above all, eager to know what the radio was. Only two of them had visited Tahiti and seen this marvel. Fortunately, we were able to tune in to a station broadcasting South Sea Island music from Hawaii. But the natives were most interested in finding out what sort of boat had managed to land us safe and sound through the breakers on the windward side of the reef. When they waded out and saw the Kon-Tiki, they exclaimed that this wasn't a boat, it was a pei-pei. Tay Chief, who spoke French, explained that pei-pei was the name of the sort of vessels described in the ancestral legends. Pei-pei, or rongo-rongos of this kind, were well known in the past and were used by their distant ancestors for ocean voyages. The oldest of the natives knew numerous myths and legends that were of great interest in this context. These even included a song about the Maui, a relation of Tiki, which stated in so many words that he had arrived from a country to the east at sunrise. The natives entertained us with roast pig and exotic fruit, and in return we gave them all the equipment we could spare. Meanwhile, the Contiki proceeded unaided to move further and further across the reef at every high tide. And one fine day, it had moved all the way across and into the lagoon. With the help of the natives, we attached ropes to the bow and pulled the raft to the edge of our little island, where we tethered it to some of the coconut palms on the shore. Today this island has been named Fenua Kontiki, which means in Polynesian, the Kontiki Island. The raft was so pliable owing to its all the rope lashings and the tough bamboo plating that we had only to pull some of the ropes and the hut returned to its original upright position. The reason why the balsa logs were still floating well above the water was that we had ignored the advice of the experts who had insisted that we should use dry wood. Instead, we had done just as the Indians had done, felled to the trees while they were still full of pith, which acted as a kind of proofing or impregnation, preventing the seawater from penetrating more than a few inches. In company with the natives, we made our way to their island.
Okay, that was good. That's the right amount of time, I think, for that. So there's only one more episode now, I think, to watch. And we'll be finished this movie, Kontiki, from 1950. That was a group of men, they sailed across on the trade winds of the Pacific Ocean alone, using the currents and the trade winds, with no other means of propulsion, back in 1947, I believe it was, their expedition. From Peru, in South America, they sailed on this balsa raft that they built from 9 logs of balsa trees. And they sailed all the way to Polynesia. What a story that was, because they didn't have, like, today they wouldn't be allowed to do that, right? Because, I mean, the risk to life and limb, they would have to have a support vessel sail alongside with them in order to secure their safety in case something went wrong. But these men did all of this. They did their own filming and their photography on the journey. All of that was done by them without any support vessel. They had nobody with them. It seems incredible now to think about it, to imagine it, because they would never do that today, would they? Well, I guess they could, yeah, because there are people who sail across the ocean by themselves, of course. But when somebody takes a group of people across, they just wouldn't even conceive of it. It doesn't seem conceivable, does it, nowadays? But anyway, they did it. And later there were the raw expeditions from Africa to Barbados, which maybe we'll cover those also, about those, maybe we'll cover them. September 12th, it is, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 13:39 hours North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, this is Cassie, saying bye for now. We just studied the article, Archipura 2, chapter 1, paragraph 10.